brains, Holly muttered.
I guess I can't blame him, he said, jamming his hands into his pockets as he resumed walking slowly up the path.
Can't blame them? Holly was outraged.
Hunching his shoulders against her wrath, he explained.
Well, look, they're supposed to have me in a secure facility in Atlanta, working with the new morality people on Stoner. But they can't find me. Now you call up and ask them to let my mom emigrate here to Goddard. Must have started alarm bells ringing on all their computers.
Holly scowled up at him.
My God, what is it back there, a police state?
Kinda. They're very nice about it. They let you do pretty much what you want, as long as you don't stray outside the lines.
Holly shook her head. I mean, they told everybody to stay indoors from sundown to sunrise for a week at a stretch, Tavalera tried to explain. And everybody did. They did what they were told, nice as pie, just about all of them. They've been trained to be good, obedient citizens.
Lordy, Lord, Holly grumbled.
I thought things were bad here when they tried to regiment us. That's why I ran for office, you know.
I remember, Tavalera said. I was here when you did.
And you won.
She put on a smile as she walked beside him.
Well, look, we'll figure out something. I'll go higher in their chain of command. We'll get your mother out here sooner or later.
Yeah, Tavalera said glumly. I know. But he was thinking, they're not going to let Mom go. As long as they've got her, they know I'll have to go back to her. They're holding her as a hostage until they get me back in their hands. Sister Angelique wasn't in pain. She was in agony. Archbishop Overmeyer had called a security team to take her to what he called an interview with one of the New Morality's psychologists. Angelique had heard more than once about dissidents or subversives who had been sent to psychologists for readjusting their mental attitudes. They brought her to a bare little office in a sub-basement of the hospital, where a kindly-looking middle-aged woman in a white coat and her two younger assistants, both of them women, were waiting for her. The two assistants were smiling, as if trying to reassure Angelique. Their teeth were white and gleamingly perfect. The middle-aged woman identified herself as a clinical psychologist.
"I don't understand why I need to talk to a psychologist," Angelique said, glancing around at the sterile metal furniture and the rows of stark white cabinets lining one wall of the little room. Gray metal boxes of electronics equipment sat on top of them. The room had an antiseptic odor to it, a strange muffled feeling to the air, as if the walls were thickly insulated with soundproofing.
"We need to probe your memory," the psychologist said briskly.
Her blonde hair was pulled back into a smooth knot. Her ice-blue eyes regarded Angelique without a trace of warmth in them.
"Including your unconscious memories," she added.
The psychologist gestured to a metal chair in the center of the small chamber, and Angelique hesitantly sat down in it. The two young assistants, both also blonde but much leaner than the psychologist, moved behind Angelique, where she couldn't see them unless she turned around in the chair. Before she could turn, they came up on either side of her and strapped her wrists to the cold metal arms of the chair.
"Don't be alarmed," said the psychologist. "The restraints are for your own protection. Sometimes the electrical stimuli cause the patient to spasm violently."
She smiled, and Angelique thought of a snake.
"We wouldn't want you to hurt yourself, would we?"
The assistants knelt on the bare concrete floor and fastened another pair of cuffs to her ankles. Then the psychologist turned to the wall phone and said simply,
"We're ready here."
The phone's minuscule screen remained blank, but a voice answered, "Very well." While the psychologist began taking various metal implements from the cabinets and arranging them carefully on a tray, Angelique started to recite the 23rd Psalm to herself.
"The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not."
Then she heard the door behind her open, and footsteps click across the bare floor. Dr. Gerald Mayfair stepped before her, a white lab coat over his crisply starched pale blue shirt and carefully knotted lavender tie. His light brown eyes seemed to Angelique to be glittering at her. She felt like a very small mouse trapped by a very large cat.
"You may feel some discomfort," Mayfair said.
Then he turned to the psychologist and nodded.
"Proceed."
Chapter 3 Stoner felt the jolt of Angelique's agony. They're torturing her. He said it aloud, coalescing his energy pattern into his physical body. Joe appeared beside him, looking equally grim.
It's a trap, she said. She's the bait and you're the prey.
Nodding, Stoner said, I know, but I can't let her suffer like that. His wife smiled at him.
Of course you can't.
Dimly, Angelique heard the psychologist say,
She's fainted again.
Or she's faking, Mayfair's cold voice replied. The readouts don't look like unconsciousness to me. Angelique sat strapped into the metal chair, her head slumped down on her breast, her entire body thrumming with the pain of the electrical shocks. They kept asking about Stoner, and she had told them all she knew, twice, three times. She would tell them anything, everything, if they would only stop the pain. She would make up tales for them, say anything they wanted to hear if they would only stop the pain.
Turn up the voltage, Mayfair said.
The psychologist hesitated.
That could do permanent damage.
What of it? If she comes out of this a vegetable, we can use her on clinical trials.
Angelique felt a hand grip her shoulder gently. And the pain eased away like a wave gently washing up on a beach. She opened her eyes, lifted her head, and saw Mayfair and the psychologist standing rooted to the floor, their mouths agape, their eyes round and staring.
You want to turn up the voltage?
Stoner's voice. She twisted around in the chair and saw that, yes, it was Keith Stoner grasping her shoulder. His eyes focused hard on Mayfair, his bearded face set in a fierce scowl.
You're a sadist, aren't you? Stoner said to Mayfair, his voice low, flat, hard. How did you... Turn up the voltage, Stoner hissed.
Mayfair twitched and shuddered. Then his arms flailed out and his legs spasmed. Screaming, he gibbered his way across the little chamber, banging into the cabinets, howling like a beast in pain until he collapsed onto the concrete floor, twitching and blubbering. The psychologist cringed away from Stoner, who took his hand from Angelique's shoulder and advanced toward her.
"Shall I increase the voltage for you, too?" he growled.
"No, please. I was only doing what he told me to."
"Nuremberg," Stoner muttered. They were only following orders, too. The two young assistants huddled in the corner, clutching at each other, sobbing with terror.
"Unstrap her," Stoner ordered. They jumped to obey.
Turning back to Angelique, Stoner asked, "Can you stand up? Can you walk?"
"I don't know,"
Angelique answered. Her legs felt totally strengthless, as if their muscles had turned to slush. Stoner reached out his hand to her. She grasped it and felt power surging along her nerves. She got to her feet. She felt shaky for a moment. Then the weakness ebbed away.
"Come on," Stoner said. "We're getting out of here."
As he reached the door, he looked over his shoulder and commanded the three cowering women, "Stay here. Don't make me hurt you the way you've hurt this prisoner of yours." Then he looked down at Mayfair, still twitching uncontrollably on the concrete floor, barely conscious.
"Learn well," Stoner muttered.
There were two uniformed security guards in the corridor, lounging by a small desk where a woman in a nurse's white uniform was chatting with them. They looked up.
"It's all right," Stoner said to them. "No need to accompany us."
They looked at each other, but made no move to hinder Stoner and Angelique. As he reached the elevator doors at the end of the short corridor, Stoner turned back toward them.
"You might want to check on Dr. Mayfair and his assistants," he said over his shoulder.
Then the elevator doors slid open and the two of them stepped in. Stoner leaned on the button marked Lobby Level. When the elevator doors slid open again, he saw that they were a long way from the lobby. A long, wide corridor stretched before them, with nurses and orderlies in white and pale green uniforms striding purposefully in both directions, some of them guiding power chairs in which patients sat huddled in gray blankets, while doctors wearing white smocks over their street clothes stepped briskly past them, many of them talking to the empty air. Clip-on phones, Stoner realized. They're allowed to use phones. Stoner glanced at a small wall screen, which immediately lit up and showed a map.